Hey, thanks everyone for joining Champagne and Planning. I'm excited to have Shauna back on today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. This has been a labor of love. We've been putting a lot of work into getting this video and new audio up and running. So thanks to you for
Of course,
doing
of
all that
course.
work.
Hopefully it works out.
Hey, it will. We're excited for today's episode. This is a vendor-focused episode. I've been seeing a lot of vendors post on these Facebook groups and different groups that we're a part of. Are you getting ghosted? Why are clients ghosting me? Or I've seen a few people even say, like, clients, just let me know if you're not interested.
Yeah, there's a lot of posts going around like, stop ghosting wedding vendors. I feel like that's a very hot topic right now.
Yeah, so I thought maybe we could dive into that
Yeah.
because I think there's a lot of different reasons for it. I
I
think
agree.
that some are things that maybe vendors need to change their process or way they're doing something. And other things are just maybe uncontrollables from clients.
Right.
So if we can dive in
Yeah.
and kind of talk about that. But first, why people might be getting ghosted. I was thinking about how a client is kind of receiving or getting your experience. I don't know. Talk me through your thoughts on this. A client reaches out. Let's first talk about where ghosting happens.
Right.
Because I think that for me, it depends on the part of the process.
Right.
So, what does ghosting actually mean?
We've talked about this before where I think the definition of ghosting gets a little taken out of control. I get more hurt by ghosting when it's like we've gone through a consult call, I've gotten to know you guys, I feel like you're moving forward, and then you hear radio silence. They don't even let you know that they're going with someone else, anything like that. I think that's more where it becomes ghosting to me. A lot of people will price shop in the beginning, be reaching out to multiple vendors just because you don't hear a response from them from your initial inquiry response. I don't necessarily think that that qualifies it as ghosting, but
Right.
I'm sure that's different for everyone too.
I think that for me, I do not have my pricing on my website. It's one of the first things they get, right? So you inquire, and a lot of people maybe have like an auto message or something that's going out to the couple right away. So we'll kind of talk about that in a second. But I would say for me, ghosting would be if they've inquired, I check the date, I'm available, I send them the pricing. At that point, if they decide to walk away, I do not think that's ghosting
No.
because they've looked at my overall package. They've looked at my
Right.
price. They've looked at everything I offer and they've decided they're not a good fit. Budget, something, there's some consideration.
Right.
So that's just them shopping their options. You got to think, like, even when you think about someone wedding planning,
Right.
you're reaching out to all these vendors just to get information.
Them inquiring to get that information that you choose not to list is equivalent to if they were to come to my website where I list all of my pricing and they see it and they realize it's out of their budget and they don't inquire and they move forward with someone else. I feel like that's kind of like the equivalent. They have to reach out to you to get that information if you don't list it. And if you do list it, they can kind of walk away without you even knowing that they were there. As vendors, we're making conscious decisions to either list that stuff or not.
I have mixed feelings on it. I don't. I know you do. It really depends on the type of wedding vendor, like
I agree.
florist, you're not really gonna let you,
No,
or something that's like a custom quote, you're really
Right.
not gonna be listing your
Right.
pricing. But I think it should be one of the first steps. They get that pricing. For me, if they have gone through the pricing guide, they set up a call. Now, I will say that my conversion rate from if someone is scheduling a call to actually booking the client is pretty high because if they've gotten to that point where they've reviewed my services, they know the pricing's a good fit. Now it's just like locking it in,
Right.
right? So if we have a really good call, I feel a great connection, and then I hear nothing. I send that one follow-up, I send another, are you still interested? If I haven't heard anything from them, I would consider I
I
got
totally
ghosted.
agree. Like you said, with follow-ups, that is another important piece. Emails in our inbox, they get lost, that
Right.
we're thinking about something else, we're doing something else. It might not be something personal. I don't want to work with you. It might just be I'm super busy this week. I got caught up at work and I didn't get a chance to answer you.
That's interesting. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about process a little bit later on, but you are going to see the most success from a vendor standpoint if you are responding to those leads quickly.
I completely agree.
We are in this time. I mean, I know I am too. I want a response like that day. We're in a very now society. Like I want, like we're Amazon, right? Like you order something and like you're kind of like,
Think about
okay.
that. I could order a package and get it back sooner than I would hear from my
So
wedding
not even some
vendor.
same day. You could get your Amazon package and you're still waiting on a response from my
I do think it's like an early bird gets the worm thing, but you know what I mean? Not all of these things are connected, but I do think if I inquired with five people and I heard back from two within a day and the other three takes 3 weeks, the chances are I'm going to move forward with the two people who mm-hmm. responded to me faster.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. I know we're going to go into, like, you know, things for business owners to have to make your job a little easier. Thinking about your process, is there something that within the first 12 to 24 hours that a client reaches out, you can quickly get a response to them in some capacity? I know some people are sending, say, like an auto response that they'll reach back out. I don't know. I have mixed feels on that.
Yeah.
Try to figure out how you can get your pricing, your packages, the next steps for them within the first 24 to 48 hours. One, set you up for success. And if you are getting ghosted in the end, it might be for a different reason. It might be,
right.
Like, it's not because you weren't there and you weren't in their inbox. You know, one thing I want to bring up that you actually mentioned to me lately, because we bounce a lot of ideas off of each other.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like my sounding board. You were talking about personalization. Because I know a lot of vendors may be using a platform like HoneyBook or something. We may have certain templates where we're not retyping our pricing structure and, you know, certain yes. things that are standard, they're not changing.
Right.
Because we're trying to make sure we can answer things quickly. Mm-hmm. So those templates are helpful. But are you personalizing your message? Because you're going to meet with that client or even they inquire about something. Are you reading through that form? And yes. I know this is something that even for myself, I have to remind myself before I get on that call. You know, we take a lot of inquiry calls. Read through their date, where the wedding, whatever information you've collected on that form, read through it and just make sure you start the call knowing the basics.
I always think of my contact form as, do I need this information or am I wasting their time? There's so many couples that will leave such meaningful messages in their tell me about yourself section or all that, like, really super personal things. Sending an automated template response is almost kind of rude in that way. It's important for us to even just take a minute or two to insert that personalization into your templates and right. really show that, like, you do care about them.
Yeah, and I love that you say you can literally take 2 minutes. It can be a few sentences of just, like, something that connects, that makes that connection, right? I know one thing we've talked about before is, like, the expectation that a client has and then the expectation that we have. Yes, we're getting those client calls and we want to make sure it's a good fit for everyone. They're trying to make sure we're the right fit for them. But I think sometimes as vendors, we're forgetting the connection piece where we get so into this is our process, this is how we do things.
Right.
I can tell you my soft hold policy in 2 seconds. But am I taking that extra few minutes to explain to the client why I feel as though I would be a great fit for this wedding.
Right.
Why do I want this wedding? I think that's going to help through the process, whether that's in the follow-up email after the call. Another thing is timelines, sticking to your timeline. So for example, one thing I'm thinking of, on my inquiry calls, I usually say, hey, I'm going to send a follow-up email within a few minutes. I say that because I know that is the first thing I do when I hop right. off that call. If I knew I couldn't get it out until the next day or 2 days, I would give realistic timelines.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
Yeah. Like, under promise, over deliver.
Yes. 100%. So if there's something that you know, okay, I can realistically get this proposal to them by tomorrow, don't make your client check back in on a deadline you set.
They're not expecting anything. They're only going off of what you're telling them. There's some people that do, like you said, the autoresponder to an inquiry, mm-hmm. and it might say, hey, I will get back to you in 24 to 48 hours. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's super important to stick to that, because if it's after 48 hours, I'm just going to assume my message either is gone or you don't care, you know? So I think it's super important, like, if you're setting a timeline for yourself, to stick to it. And I think that goes throughout your whole entire process too, not just the inquiry form. Doing what you say you're going to do is one of the key parts of being a professional, especially in our industry. Like, people want to feel like they can trust you.
Yeah, they're bringing you into one of the most important days of their mm-hmm. life. I think you have to be able to, I know for me, that relationship is sometimes crafted over a year, even for, you know, for all wedding vendors, it's sometimes a year to 18 months out that you're working with a client. Is the person that they're, you know, interacting with on their wedding day, can they trust you throughout the process? Are you establishing that relationship?
Are you going to be good with their families? Like, you know what I mean? Right. There's so many things that they have to consider. It's not always just about your beautiful photos or, you know, like a beautiful planning guide.
That's interesting you said that. And a little sidebar, I think that sometimes as wedding vendors, especially if you haven't gone through the process yourself before, I think that we forget that there is a lot in the wedding planning process for clients. And I see this firsthand with a lot of my clients, but they're not just sitting down, booking their vendors, moving on. Sometimes there is family dynamics involved. You know, I had an inquiry one time that it was a cultural thing. They actually had to sit down with both families and go through all of the options before making a decision on something. You know, there's situations like that. And even if it's not a cultural thing, that happens naturally in a lot of families, right, where there's maybe someone that's paying. And,
right.
You know, they have to be involved in the decision. So they're taking your information, taking it back to their families. How easy is it for them to do that?
Right.
Is it, hey, they went over it, they described everything in detail? Or did you get on the call and you were kind of chaotic and you didn't really know your packages yourself? Like, yeah, those things I think are important too. How are you showing up in the inquiry process and the experience? How are you showing up for the call? Mm-hmm. You know, like that's something I think is important. I think a question for vendors is like, pause the podcast right now. Write down your process.
Right.
If you can easily do it, okay, you're step one. If you sat there and looked at that piece of paper and were like, then maybe we take a minute, right, and we start to figure out what that process is. I had to do that. You've seen even my partial planning and my full service planning. I made checklists of like what the client gets first, then what I do, then what they.
Yeah, I have that too.
Put it on paper.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And I think that also helps like with organization with if you are doing email templates and things, like having a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and like sub emails of each of those to help you kind of organize your process.
So let's transition a little bit here. So we talked about some reasons why we're going to go into more and going into more of like the vendor process. But one other thing I want to talk about is like some other reasons they may be ghosting you. One, we said it might be pricing, right? Mm-hmm. So they may have received your information. Maybe you're outside their budget. It could also be a timing thing, and not like a timing of your responses, but a timing of where they're at in the process. So actually one of our DJ friends, he had said to me one day, he's like, if they come up to me at a bridal show and they don't have a date, I give them my information, say, hey, congratulations, reach out to us like when you're further in the process. Because for them, if you don't have a date and you do not have, you have to book like a few other things before you ever get to DJ, right?
Right.
Like you don't have a venue. You don't have a date. You don't have a caterer. Like
you can't,
you're
book
not here yet.
Yeah.
So recognizing too, that I think like you going along with what you said of them not understanding or knowing the process, they just got engaged. All right, let's reach out to everybody. Let's reach out to photographers, planners, florists. I don't know what we need.
Yeah.
I have people that will try to do hotel blocks at like 18 months. You cannot do a hotel block until at least 12 months. Some are 11 at some hotels. That's when they opened up their calendars for the next year. So there's certain things like that they may not understand.
Right.
And so maybe they reached out to you. A perfect example of this. Today, I got a not inquiry. Okay. And I was looking at it and I was like, didn't I already send them a message? I sent them a message back in like October. They just reached out again today, but it's for like maybe late 2024.
Yeah.
For me, it's a little late, but you can tell they like started.
Yeah.
They ghosted me like we're talking about. Not really, but they kind of walked away. I just thought maybe it was something else.
Yeah.
And then now they're coming back around like, oh, now we got to think about maybe a coordinator again.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it might just be a timing thing.
I feel like there is always a reason for it. There are a lot of graphics being thrown around of don't ghost your wedding vendors. I feel like there is a lot of heat being thrown at clients for ghosting. Mm. Take that as an opportunity to reflect and look at your own process. Your like, where could you have done better? Because there is a reason that they are ghosting you. It may be your pricing, like you said, which is something that you shouldn't have to change. I don't think you have to go back and be like, hey, I can do it for cheaper. There are some flukes in that. If you're getting ghosted enough where you need to say, I'm getting ghosted a lot, maybe that should be an opportunity for you to look into your business and see where can I improve in that and where are people getting lost?
Wow, the perfect transition to client experience.
Yeah. I think we should talk about really quick, though, about the magic email.
This was new to me.
Yes.
If you're a vendor listening and you are like, oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah.
I learned last night with the magic email.
Yeah. So we could talk just briefly about follow-ups. Many of us send like the initial response to the inquiry and then we don't hear back and we're like, oh, we're getting ghosted. Having a process of following up with them after that is super important. I usually send one follow-up of like, hi, like just seeing if you had any questions of the guide I sent over. Like if there's any questions I can answer for you, let me know. Let's hop on a call, you know, traditional follow-up. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I'll send one more after that. But then what we've discussed is there's something called the magic email, which in my experience almost guarantees a response. Mm-hmm. It might not be the answer you're looking for, but you would get closure one way or another. Mm-hmm. So
you're going to tell them what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So the magic email reads, since I have not heard from you on this, I'll assume your priorities have changed.
That's it.
That's it. You don't say, hey, hope yes. all is well. No, you literally just say that and that's it. No signature, nothing. And it feels a little rude, but I think it's very vague and also kind of gives the vibe that like, you're done with this. You know what? I'm moving on. I think it works for a reason.
I can see it. I sent a few. Shauna watched me send a couple of these. But I think it may work because if right now my phone went off and I got an email that said, since I've not heard from you on this, I'll assume you're you can bet I'm probably opening it and being like, did I miss something here? I think that's maybe why it works.
Yeah.
It's a very direct, simple email, which kind of grabs your attention. All right. So client experience. Let's dive into CRMs. You know, if I get a chance to talk about a CRM, specifically HoneyBook, I will.
I will. I love HoneyBook so much.
I love CRMs. No, I think that, and we're going to get into this, but I think that there are so many things to do in business and you need to make sure you have the right platforms in place to be able to do business well.
Right.
We're talking about ghosting. We're talking about getting responses out quickly. What things are you doing? And I actually had to ask myself this. What things am I doing every single client that I want to make sure it has a process, but also I'm not duplicating work that doesn't need to be duplicated?
Yeah. I think as soon as we get into where we are having a repeated thing that we do every client, that's when it needs to become a system.
I use HoneyBook. You use HoneyBook. I know some people that use like Zapier. There's a few.
Dubsado. Yeah.
Yeah. Dubsado. There's a few platforms out there. But let's talk about the client experience from the beginning. And let's go back to some of the basics. I jumped the gun. I'm like, CRMs, HoneyBook, that's it. But there's some businesses that are not even functioning with this. So.
Yeah.
We want to address that question for vendors. Why am I getting ghosted? I have seen this across the board. This is not just one vendor. This is not new vendor. You know, there's across the board. So there's some of you that are going to be listening. You're going to be thinking, oh, well, I don't have that. Okay, well, maybe you're a little earlier in the process, but maybe you need to kind of go through our checklist of things that you should have.
Right.
So let's start with creating the business.
Mm-hmm.
So you've created your business. You've decided on a name. I feel like that's what people do first.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Like, all right. I want to call it this.
Yeah.
And then from there, you're like, okay, I should probably become something, whether it's an LLC, a partnership.
A DBA sometimes in the beginning.
Mm, yeah, that's a good point. Especially probably for photographers.
Yeah.
Right? I feel like photographers are probably.
Yeah. I started as a DBA.
Okay. Yeah. Which makes sense. I started the other business as a partnership. And then when we got this one, we did an LLC. Because I was like, I don't know. I need to be protected.
Yeah.
I saw something recently. And it was a post in one of the groups, you know, all the wedding groups. And it was a client, not my client, but a client that had said, I'm freaking out. My wedding venue just asked for all my vendors' insurance policies and my photographer doesn't have insurance. I already paid X amount of dollars. Crazy. What do I do? What are your thoughts on this?
I know there's a lot of vendors in general, photographers included, who don't have insurance. And I'm like, you guys are freaking nuts.
Yeah.
That was like one of the very first things that I did when I got my business. I just think that it's like a non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. I think especially in the case if you're doing weddings, you're always going to be working at different venues and you want to make sure you're covered. A lot of venues do require it now to have insurance. So I definitely think it's one of those things that's like a cost of doing business. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's pretty essential to have it. I almost wonder why people don't. I do know there's some venues that require it. Like I know a videographer I worked with before that doesn't have insurance, but he worked at a venue that required it. And you can get like a day pass insurance type of thing. But he paid like a quarter of what I pay for the whole year to have that for one day. So I really think it's one of those investments worth making and that it is one of those essential things in the beginning that you have to get.
For you, I think even more so than even myself, your insurance covers a little bit more than even just like, okay, a venue requires it, right? Like, tell me a little, like, all your gear.
All my gear. So if someone trips and falls, $1,
you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, it does cover all my gear. If I drop something,
if someone who's dancing on the dance floor runs into one of your lights.
runs into the lights.
This has happened multiple times.
Yeah, yeah, it happened. And that's the thing is, like, you think it's never going to happen. It happens.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about it in the moment. You just got to, you know, move on. But having those systems in place where when something fails, mm-hmm. you're able to kind of recoup that without it being a huge deal.
Right.
Is really great. Obviously, insurance doesn't really cover, like, wear and tear in that way. But if you lose it, if someone steals it, mm-hmm. and then obviously general liability insurance is... Mm. Super important.
I think that also for me, for liability insurance, it's huge because my whole entire team is like sometimes up on ladders and like doing yeah. all these things that they want to make sure the venue specifically want to make sure we're covered. You saw last night I was doing some workers comp. I always have to do a workers comp like audit and like census for the year. And you're like, what are you doing?
I'm like, girl.
These are some things that people just do not realize. Go into it. Yeah. I do have like, you know, 7 or 8 part-time employees every year. And so I have a lot more forms and insurances on the back end to make sure that like, one, we're covered to go into venues. Two, we're covered so that they don't sue me. My team's great, right? Fingers crossed, nothing happens.
Yes.
But you need to be protected if you're having employees. You know, that's a whole yeah. other conversation. But like step one of business is, I think we both agree, like make sure you're getting some form of insurance.
Right.
I think that's huge.
Right.
I've had this happen where you need to get the certificate of insurance, but you also need to list them as an additional insured.
Yeah.
It's not hard. This is not, I think some people are shied away from this if they see this in a venue yeah. policy. It's really just reaching out to your insurance provider, asking for this. They're going to tell you what information they need and it's done.
Yeah. To me, it's very straightforward. And yeah. obviously it's more of a pain for some venues to require and some venues don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just one of those things. It's if you're going to work there, you own a business that's part of the back end that you just have to get accustomed with.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk a little bit about website proposals, things like that. You know, I think it's common for people to have websites. I think that there is a few situations where some people don't, or they're using, a lot of people use like Not Wedding Wire, you know, a Facebook page. You know, I've still seen some of that around. I think that let's at least create a basic website. There's so many platforms that I do mine through Wix. Do you use Word?
It's Show It, but I have like a WordPress okay. blog, so I don't know, like... Right. I would say Show It.
yeah. But there is so many really user-friendly. Canva can help with this, too. Yeah. Wix, you literally could create a template, put in your basic information, and even just get like a one. Some people have like a one-page website.
Yeah, where you can just scroll through and see all their information. And when you
click on the menu, it just goes down the page.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
You can buy templates on Etsy. Like, you can buy templates anywhere.
They've made it relatively simple to start with like a decent looking website. It doesn't have to have a lot of stuff. I always think an about me page.
Yep.
A short blurb just so that they can get a little bit more and include some things that like you like to do on the side.
Yeah.
You know, I think that a lot of people are doing more personal things. I mean, I know like if you're having your website designed or like even myself, I design my website, but we put hours into our website. So there's more to it. But I'm talking about for a vendor who maybe does not have a website and you're just trying to get something up.
Right.
Just do a little paragraph about yourself.
Yeah.
How you got into the business, how long you've been doing it, if yeah. that's something that's relevant. The areas that you service, because that'll help with like SEO right. as well. You know, maybe how to get a hold of you. It can be if you do not have a CRM, which would be like a client relationship management system. I forgot to say that before. If you do not have something like a plug-in form, you can do a form right through a lot of these. Like Wix has a form.
Yeah.
You know, like just a general contact form.
Yeah.
You could create a Google form and embed it in the website.
Yeah.
If you don't know how to do something as well, because there's times when we haven't known how to do something, YouTube is a great resource for vendors. Yes. Just Google, like, how do I embed a Google form on my website?
we're like, what are the options? Like, how do I create a contact form?
Right.
There's so many different things. You can Google, YouTube. The internet is an endless resource. Like, right. You should definitely use it, especially in the beginning process when we're not super ready to invest in outsourcing that stuff. Because I know for me, I used to make my own website too. I eventually got to the point where I was like, this is not working for me anymore. I need something a little bit more polished. So that's when I hired someone. And I think having your own website is super important because you need ownership of some sort of space online to attract clients. Facebook, Instagram, relying on all these platforms that one, you either have to pay for, or two, you don't really have full control of that. It's really nice to have a website where you can really invest time into making it your own. Like you said, SEO is really great.
And I feel like once you've invested the time to make even a one-page website, later on, whether it's a year later or you get some downtime, you're going to go back and then start to have that evolve even further. Yeah. Like, you build. Yes. It's not a overnight, everything looks amazing. There's some things that we've done that we know we've done it before. Okay, this is how we're going to do it. And it does. But I think that sometimes it's like, just start somewhere and commit every single year to improving your process, changing something for the better, figuring out where you're putting your money. Yep. You and I have had those conversations. There was some marketing resources we were utilizing that weren't helping our business. So we took that money away from that, invested it in a different area. Then we'll talk about outsourcing, obviously. I always think if there's something that you're not good at and you know it's going to be a barrier for you to continue with business, that's a task that you should consider outsourcing. Just to kind of do a short little recap here of what we have so far for business basics. Some sort of business, whether it's the LLC, DBA, that you need to figure out and research the options, and depending on the area and what you're doing, do you have employees, is it just you, all of that. Mm-hmm. Some type of insurance in some capacity, and then website. What about payments?
The first thing I did after I got my DBA was get my own business bank account. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the first things I would recommend too. You have to figure out what works for you. Investing in the CRM that I have, HoneyBook, I think is like a no-brainer. I can collect all my payments on there. It makes it super easy for the client to pay me. I think that just makes it super easy. I don't want to have to be like, hey, can you mail me a check? Right. Those are the days of the past.
Right.
Throughout the booking process, people want it to be convenient. They don't want it to be hard.
You touched on something I want to highlight. The one, client experience. We're talking again, this is all going back to why you're getting ghosted, right?
Yeah.
Is it easy for the client to make a payment?
Yeah.
I know for myself that like, if I can't pay something online, it might go weeks.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be honest. I want to be able to pay it right there. If I can also like Apple Pay.
Yeah.
And I don't have to even walk over to my purse and get my card.
Right.
Like, that's nice. There's a lot of things that work together now that you can do that. But yes, I think some type of payment online, you can still have the option. Like, I still, if you want to mail a check, here's our address, whatever. But try to make it as convenient as possible. Also, I want to talk about credit card fees.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like those go hand in hand.
I think there's mixed reviews. And if you're listening to this, we're not giving you like a right or wrong, but we're giving you our opinion.
Yeah.
A lot of people are still charging credit card fees. And here's a little tip. You can cover your credit card fees without making it a poor experience for the client.
Raise your prices.
Raise your price. Figure out when you are developing those quotes, cover everything that you need, but then sell it to your client that it's included.
Think about like a resort. So many more people would want to go to an all-inclusive versus go to a place where you need to pull out your card every time you need something.
And now there's another fee. And here's
another fee. Think about that though. There's a fee if you want to pay me for my services. It sounds so backwards when you think about it like that. A credit card fee is a cost of doing business. You have to factor that in when you're figuring out what is your cost of doing business. Like, how much does it cost me to offer this service?
Right. They're getting punished because they want to pay you by credit card. And you know, and the other thing too, everyone uses something different. Whatever works for you, you're a small scale, large scale, you need to figure that out. So we're not saying go get HoneyBook and accept credit card payments.
Yeah.
We're saying figure out what works for you, still make it easy for clients and accessible. The other thing to consider is safe processing of credit cards. There is some platforms that are not as safe. Okay, so can I tell you a little bit of a horror
story? We love the horror stories.
As my clients know, I always review contracts as they come in. And I had a partial client that sent a contract for a vendor. And I'm reading through it. Everything's looking pretty standard. And then I get to the payment section and it said the payment had to be submitted via Venmo, but they could not put any identifying information in the payment section.
Yeah,
my brain's starting to work. I can see it. Nothing in the memo of like what services it was for, name of client, date, anything. Random emoji, basically, like a piece of pizza. The reason that they were doing that is because they were obviously using a personal Venmo.
Yeah.
And if Venmo sees something that relates to a transaction or a service, then they're going to get fined. They have to have a business account. And on top of that, there was a policy in the contract that said that if the client used any identifying information about their wedding, the fees would be on the client themselves.
Like they would have to pay if the vendor got in trouble.
If the vendor got in trouble, the client would have to pay the fees. Illegal 101.
Literally illegal.
This is not something that we can be doing.
No, absolutely not.
Like vendors do better. Like, I'm sorry. Like that one. And this is not a vendor that we work with, you know, this is not a common thing, like, but I was shocked by that.
Yeah. And along the same vein of payment horror stories, I feel like you have to tell them this one story that you had experienced with credit cards.
I think I'm just still in a little bit of shock. To give my background, I started in fundraising events. Everything had to be PCI compliant. Safety, basically HIPAA, like healthcare privacy, but for credit card. If I'm calling you and I'm saying, hey, can you give me your credit card information? One, I'm not going to be in a coffee shop, right? I'm not going to be in voice, you know, proximity to someone who could hear your credit card information and write it down.
Yeah.
I'm not keeping it on a paper file and like then leaving it out on a desk, you know?
Yeah.
There's all these different things and it really depends on how you accept payment. So there's different ways to do it. We had a situation where a vendor, they sent over the contract to be signed. Now, I go through all those contracts. So I obviously I fill everything out and whatever. They sent me a shared doc. And I was scrolling through it and it had someone else's credit card information in it.
It's crazy.
They just emailed me a client's credit card information.
I mean, it's a contract, so it has a lot of personal information in there, right? Plus your credit card number.
Has address, has phone number, and they sent it to me. They thought it was blank. Also, open your documents before you send it. And this didn't happen once. It happened twice. I like emailed them back and I was obviously very concerned about the situation. They sent me here's the updated. It was another one, a different person. I deleted both of them immediately. This is not okay.
Yeah, right? No.
I emailed back and I was like, this had personal credit card information in it.
For two people.
Two people. And now you want me to fill this out with my client's credit card information. No.
Yeah,
no. Solid pass.
No,
why? I don't know why you need a wedding planner to review these things and protect you, because I think I just saved you from fraud. Vendors, I know that you're busy. I know that there's so much going on. But create a process that protects you from these minor mistakes. People are human, but if everything's so chaotic that you're sending a file and you can't figure out whether it has someone's personal information in it, you should probably get a different system where they just pay directly through the system.
You kind of have to, at some point that's just unacceptable.
Let's switch gears a little bit to pricing guides.
Yeah.
What does your pricing guide look like? Tell us all
I've
secrets.
Kind of gone through a couple different phases of pricing guides because I used to do all of my pricing guide through HoneyBook. And I did really like that, but sometimes I felt like it was more difficult for them to have to access a file versus like if it was like a PDF. So now I send them it's basically like a Canva link to a presentation version of my brochure. So is how they can look at my initial pricing guide. And then from there, like I send them more HoneyBook stuff after that.
Okay, that makes sense. I actually have two different ones. Is that shocking? So if they're in the Not in Wedding Wire, they get my email, they get a link to the pricing guide,
which
is like a web page that has, a hidden web page that has the information, which seems to work well, and then just a link to set up a call. If they're inquiring through the website, then they're going to get the full pricing guide. Tells a little bit more, some frequently asked questions, the prices, packages, all of that. And then at the end, they can set up a call. which is, again, when you're talking about ghosting, you know, we're at that point now. So now if they've set up the call, now we're moving to that next phase. You know, let's actually talk for a second, because we're obviously talking about pricing guides that we're sending beforehand. I've seen some pretty scattered post pricing guides. Sometimes with florists, we're getting pictures of certain things and inspo. The clients really like that, because you've explained your vision to this vendor, mm-hmm. and now you're seeing them bring that back to you with a visual, and it helps. You were talking about trust earlier. It helps them to know you're on the same page.
Right.
They get my vision.
Yes.
I feel like they understand the look I'm going for.
Yeah.
I hear that a lot. So if you're not giving your clients some type of visual, and you're in a very visual market, like that's your side of it, I think that you should be. You know?
Yeah, I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And I think, I feel like that has to be harder for creating custom proposals. I think HoneyBook still would be a good platform for that. But I do think even just making like a Canva PDF might be like the easiest way to do that.
Let's tell them about the Canva hack. Can I share?
Yeah.
Okay. So we like Canva. I feel like Canva is a very useful platform for us. It's just easy and it's really user friendly. And even I have the premium, but the free version for vendors, it is great. Like you can do so much with the free version. You can take a photo. So say style guides, they submit an inspo photo. I really like this look. So say you took a picture of us right now. And we took this picture, put it in Canva. We could right click and say, apply these colors to presentation, document, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It takes all the colors that are in this set right now and pulls them out. So say you're a florist, right? And they send you an inspo pic. You could match those colors and put like a few circles, because you've seen like the, you know,
the color palette,
the color schemes, the palettes. You could really just match that to the photo, and you've just instantly created a color palette that matches their design. And now you're already on the same page as them, and you had to do little to no work.
And that goes a long way just to see it in a different visual form, because like so many people see things on Pinterest mm-hmm. and are sending them to vendors, but seeing them interpreted a little bit and shown back to them is a great way to build that connection.
Other thing, and I'm giving all these tips for, I think it's mainly for florists right now, just because this is kind of the visual proposal that I see. You can use, have you used Google image search?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so you go to Google and you click like the little images. I think it's on the right hand corner. When you do that, you can actually upload an image to Google, and it will search for like images.
Oh, okay.
So helpful.
Yeah.
So say it's like baby's breath and white roses, and you've put one image in, it will now, it's like the behind the scenes Pinterest hack, right?
Yeah.
Like you don't have to search for hours and try to find the right thing. You can just upload that, and it's going to bring all of these related images.
Wow.
So as a florist, you could really take that and find a few related images to help supplement that vision.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's huge.
Thinking about just having a color palette, just having a couple images to mm-hmm. show that you're understanding the vision they're bringing you, just adding those things alone to your proposal with all the numbers and everything, it makes it feel a lot more professional.
And creating a template for your proposal. Again, do not recreate this process. We've been touching on that so much. Make a Canva or make a Google Doc or whatever it is that you're just changing couple's names, the date. You can have those two lines. What the flowers are that, you know, these are some flowers that are going to be used in the setting. And then from there, input your images and then the prices. Again, this didn't take long, but you created this. And now once you've created something once, we will attest to this.
Yeah.
Building all of our HoneyBook stuff, I feel like, took forever. But now that it's built, I love this process, you know? So just take the time. Again, we're going back to, why are you getting ghosted? Well, we've touched on quite a few things here. How is your client receiving your experience? Do they feel like it's a personalized approach? From there, they've had that meeting, you're sending that follow-up, or you sent the pre-pricing guide. Is it something that's easy for them to understand? They feel a connection to it. They feel like you understand them. They feel like it's professional, and this isn't your first day on the job.
Yeah.
You know, there's a secure platform for them to make payments. You have a payment process. Vendors, please know your process. You never want to get on a call and be like, oh, yeah, I, you know what, my payments, no, I know for me. 50% up front, remaining 50% 2 weeks prior. I know my process. That is what it is. I've stuck with it and it's great. So I think those are things that if you can have those standards in place, it's going to be easier for you to sell yourself with the client, but it's also just a better experience for them. Let's talk a little bit of phone or Zoom calls.
Yeah, for your initial consult call.
Mm-hmm. What do you
think? We do different things, but I'm definitely open to both. Okay. I've done maybe a handful of Zoom calls, and I do really like them. Every time I do them, I'm like, oh, I'm really glad I did that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so used to doing a consult call, just a normal phone call.
Right.
I've gotten better about this, but in the beginning, I used to pace all the time when I was talking to people. Sometimes sitting still and talking is really hard for me.
What we're doing right
I'm
now.
I'm like, oh my God, if I can take this and walk around the room. Sometimes I feel like a Zoom would almost be like a service because then it looks like I'm distracted, but I'm not. I'm taking notes. I'm processing what they're saying. I'm thinking about what they're saying. I'm sometimes walking around.
I have some thoughts here. So first of all, I remember the first time I like took a Zoom meeting. I think it was when you were around. Like not my first Zoom call, but like when we were like together.
Oh, like I when I first
call.
Saw yours.
And you're like, it's a Zoom call. Like I think you were like what? Do you mean it's a Zoom meeting, right? Pre-COVID, we actually used to do all of our first meetings in person. Can you imagine Crazy. That? I would say that's not the best use of your time. I think logistically, unless there's a request for it, I wouldn't suggest in-person meetings. I don't think it's necessary. I think Zoom or phone call is great. And I do not think that there's a right or wrong to this. I think that your process works great. I also think you give your clients a great visual and that welcome letter pricing guide beforehand. When they get on that call, like there's something that they can even look at while they're on the phone with you.
Yeah.
So I do not think there's a good or a bad way to do this. I have a preference of Zoom calls. One, for me, getting to know the client and having that like face to name and like starting that relationship where I'm going to be on quite a few Zoom calls with them over the course of a year.
Yeah.
I need to start that with the inquiry. I need to make sure it's a good fit. I need to make sure like we're vibing in the right way, you know, and to negate one of the things that you said, you were like, I don't want to be typing it. I totally get that. And that's how I felt in the beginning until I implemented recording my Zoom calls.
Yeah, I know you do that too.
And I definitely have gone back and forth and tried some things out. I don't know if you remember, but for a while I was transcripting all of them. So I had another service I was paying for that like took the video and then like took notes from it. That wasn't working great. It wasn't really catching at all. It was harder for me to go back and try to search that than just to go back and watch the video.
Really?
But the way I do it is as soon as I start my call, I just say, hey, you know, I just want to let you know that I do record all my inquiry calls. It's just so that I do not have to be typing the whole time and taking notes. I just want to make sure you're okay with that. If they're not, I can turn it off. I can take notes. That's right. Fine. But that helps me to be able to go back and be like, okay, what did they say? They're giving you so many details. Again, we're talking about personalization.
Yeah.
They're telling you their whole engagement story. In the Alps. It's like, this is great, but I'm probably not going to remember every single detail of it.
Yes.
So if I record it, I can go back and then I can say, oh yeah, they told me that. All right, their dog's name is Lucy. Now I can use that in my follow-up, which I think is really important because they're trying to give you, and also too, now they're giving me vendor names. Oh, we've already booked a photographer. We've already booked a florist. Well, I don't want to have to ask them that again. Again, client experience. I don't want to have to send them a questionnaire that says, who is your photographer, when they already told me in the initial meeting. So I try to be really mindful of those things and just kind of make sure that I'm getting that across the board with a Zoom call.
So do you ever find yourself, I think my problem is right now for my 2024 people, I'm at the 6 month check-in point for a lot of them where I kind of go back and I revisit my notes from their consult call and drafting a timeline based on those.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, the easy part of that is being able to look at the question that I usually ask and what their answer was versus I had to go rewatch all of my inquiry calls multiple times. I think that would drive me nuts.
Yeah, but you aren't necessarily. So my memory is relatively good. The number of times that I rewatch one is probably once in a while.
I guess you can probably remember like when you were talking about it.
Right after the call, I'm taking some notes, some physical notes. So like I'm probably putting in a few things in their details right after the call, but it's kind of there as like a protection. So I would say you can still follow up and do some follow-up notes in the 5 minutes after the call.
Yeah.
But then just having the recording to like go back to if you needed to.
In my process, I feel like it would create another step for me.
Yeah, which is understandable.
But which isn't always a bad thing. thing. Right. So there are certain times where I feel like it would be super beneficial if I just had it recorded.
Yeah.
I get very comfortable with the way that I do things. I think there's really good things about doing a Zoom or doing a phone call. I definitely don't recommend the in-person thing.
No.
I love being able to like be in person with my clients, but I also think that
it would make ghosting so much worse.
Yeah.
If you had met them in person.
I know someone who she drove, I think from Buffalo to Rochester, I think it was, to meet someone for an in-person consult call and they didn't show up. That was the biggest waste of your time. And now you're even more frustrated. I would just do a phone call. It's convenient. The client doesn't have to, you know, find time in their schedule to meet you at Starbucks.
No, I definitely agree with you on that. So I think there's benefits to both. Figure out what works for you. I will say this. If you're going to choose to do Zoom calls, show up presentable. Like, know your limits too as a vendor, right? If you know that you're always a little bit more chaotic, or, you know, maybe a phone call so the client can't see that.
Yeah.
Maybe a better idea. But if you feel, for me, like, I like the Zoom call aspect. I know I'll be able to be seated at my desk. And, you know, like, if you're always on the road, like, consider what your day-to-day of the job looks like.
Right.
And what would fit in best for you.
Right. Like, you don't want to be in the car driving, Zooming on your phone.
Yeah. You want to, again, make them feel like they're the priority.
Yeah.
We would expect clients to show up for a meeting and be present and be ready to go. I always, like, if they get, actually one of the first questions I ask on my call is, hey, did you have a chance to review the pricing guide? For me, if you've gotten on the call and you didn't review the pricing guide, I just have to take a step back, right?
Yeah.
Because now I'm showing you the pricing guide. Not that it's going to be shocking, but like, you don't even know where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah.
You didn't review our services.
Right.
I would expect clients to, one, step one, review the pricing guide that I sent over.
Right.
So if I'm expecting that of them, they're going to expect me to show up for the call, know their date, know their, you know, yeah, like we talked about before,
yeah,
know those things. So again, we're talking about being ghosted. How are you showing up for your meetings? Whether it's a phone call, a Zoom call, are you showing up prepared? Do you have a process? If you're not great at public speaking, if you're not great at those client calls that you feel makes you feel a little stressed, what can you do to help that process? Sometimes for me, for when I'm on Zoom, I'm sharing my screen and I'm showing them, this is my checklist that we go through. This, you know, I'm...
Yeah, like a presentation almost.
Yeah, because it helps me, you know? Right. And so think about those things that you need in your area to make your visual that much better, or even just your process that much better, so that the client feels like, wow, a lot of my inquiry calls, I get to the end and I say, do you have any questions? They say, well, actually, I did, but you covered all.
I have the same thing. That's another system that we've learned from having to do the same thing over and over and over again.
Right. So there you have it with client experience. I feel like we covered that well. So that's, again, one of the reasons that you may be getting ghosted is maybe it's something in that area. Vendors across the board, you may have been listening to that and think, well, I don't have a pricing guide. Okay. So make a timeline for yourself and say, by this date, I'm going to develop a pricing guide.
Yeah. I think that goes for literally any of the things we talked about. Cause right. I know it happens to all of us where, you know, you're like, I'm going to do this. And then it's a year later and it's still not done. Having that discipline with yourself really goes a long way. It gives you that confidence boost. I said I was going to do this and I did it. Having professionalism doesn't always mean being super polished, but it does mean doing what you say you're going to do. And you should hold yourself to that same standard too. Mm-hmm. If you say you're going to do this for yourself, you should do it.
So what if there's something that I just know I can't do? It's not within my bandwidth. And I know that I'm, even though I set that deadline, I'm not going to get to it.
I think that's when we know that it's time to outsource.
Yeah.
And we've all had moments like that where we know it's time to give that task to someone who is better at doing that. Outsourcing is great because it gives us our time back to do the things that we love about running a business. Because there are so many things that, you know, you start a photography business because you love taking pictures. You don't start a photography business because you love figuring out how to file your own taxes. There's so many things that you sign up for when you go full time doing these things, but it would be nice if you could have that time to devote to what you love doing versus things that would take you a lot longer to accomplish versus paying someone who does this every day.
People a lot of times are like, oh, I'm in full time. Part of me, when I see those posts, I'm like, Like, and not because, like, congratulations if you just went full time. That's amazing. Love that for you. There's so much that goes into it. I quickly realized, even when I went full time, I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, you know, so we're talking about outsourcing, right? And Shauna was like, Eliza, I think that you can reconcile your transactions for my taxes this year. Let me tell you all how far that went. I got about 2 months in and I said, nope, I'm going to pay the $600 and have someone else reconcile my transactions for me. It's not something that I enjoy. It's not one of my strengths. I know it needs to be done. Again, it's part of the business, but for me, it's a cost of doing business. I'm going to outsource it. And since I've done that, now I can focus on something else I really need to focus on. I know people, I'm thinking other things that we outsource. I know obviously both like accounting, that's a big thing. For me, there's been, you know, I've gone through different social media stuff in the past, whether it's like some scheduling apps like Planoly, and they're not always great with the algorithm anymore. Posting directly is a little easier. But whether now there's people that are doing some social media packages, content creation, there's people that'll write blogs, there's, you know, find what things that, I guess, make a list of the three things that you love about doing business and the three things that you dread most about doing business.
Yeah.
You should probably start to outsource those three things.
Yes. And I think everyone has a different threshold. I think about like the reconciling thing. For me, it was like super frustrating in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But then once I started doing it, I was like, oh, I can do this. That's fine. If I got to like the census thing that you talked about, I think I'd be like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good. I'll give it to somebody else. Right. So I think everyone has those different thresholds. I know for photographers specifically, outsourcing is usually meaning you're editing. Some of us can take on more of that editing without having to outsource versus some people, they get very overwhelmed very easily and it would make more sense for them to outsource editing versus outsourcing, for example, like having a virtual assistant doing your emails and stuff like that. Like you said, kind of making a list of these things that you need to be doing and deciding what tasks do I want to devote my time to and what tasks would it be better for me to outsource and how can I go about getting that started.
We talked a little bit about obviously primarily ghosting and the before process. Just quickly want to touch on, you've now booked that client. So the client books, great. They've had a great experience. You've done all the steps that we've given you and you've improved that process when they were a, you know, potential client. And now they've signed. I saw the other day in one of the swaps, it said like, I had my vendor that I was communicating with and I booked them. The communication was great. And then I booked them and then they ghosted, right? Like they disappeared. So it's like the reverse ghost, right?
Yeah.
I just want to touch briefly on this, your thoughts on it. And also what are some ways that right after a client signs, even if you can't quite get to that next step yet, what are some of those initial things you're doing to say, hey, I appreciate you. I'm grateful for you signing.
Yeah.
This process is going to be amazing. Here's what it looks like.
My first thing after I book someone is I send them a booking confirmation email. Mm. And honestly, this is a more recent implementation that I've done in the past like year or so. And basically what it says is, I've received your retainer and your signed contract. Thank you so much. I'm so looking forward to working with you. And then I kind of give them like the next steps. So for me, it would be like engagement session. Like, now that we've booked, we can officially start working on your engagement session. Like, get that on the calendar. Here's what to expect of like how far out you should book your engagement session with me. Then I have something about, in my packages, I include a wedding guide, which is basically mainly photo focused guide to helping you plan your wedding. Your access to my copy of the wedding guide will be coming to you soon. Like, expect that in the mail. And then I think there's one more thing I have on there. Oh, recommended vendors. So I also share a link to my page that has all my recommended vendors in that email as well. After that, I also write about when they can expect to hear from me and kind of like, again, just reiterating those next steps, because I think as soon as you accomplish something, you check something off the list, you're like, okay, what's next?
Right.
So I think the first step is to always acknowledge like, hey, you just paid me, you booked me, I'm grateful for that. And then also next steps, what do we do next from here?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that just giving them an outline, because they, again, they do not know your process.
Yeah.
The first time they're hiring, usually the first time they're hiring a wedding photographer.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here?
Yeah.
What time of the year do I do my engagement? You know, and I know you go over some of those things on the call, but just giving that little reminder of, here's what's coming next. For me, it's a similar process. They get a welcome guide. Ours is virtual. And it just says, here are my communication hours. Like, when you're typically going to hear from me. I usually require 48 hours for an email response. You know, here are the things that we're going to send you now. And then you'll have this long to complete that. And then we'll move on to this step. So they're constantly feeling like they have something that they can like at least know what's coming in the near future. Yeah,
something to look forward to.
We actually send a, which I know you do as well, we send a welcome gift.
Yeah.
I love this. It's like one of my favorite parts of it. You know, even if it's just a small note from the couple, like, oh my gosh, we received your gift today. We're so excited to work with you.
Yeah.
You're just drumming up that excitement, that trust that we talked about. Like, they know. You're almost like locking in that we know we made a good decision.
Yes.
And I feel better.
I think that giving the gift in the beginning is almost one of like the most crucial things, because I think that so many people give gifts after the wedding. Mm-hmm. I love that too. I used to do that and I really like that too. But I think in the beginning, it does kind of reaffirm, like it's affirming to get that and be like, they do care about me. They are excited to work with me. So I think doing that in the beginning is really helpful for that.
Yeah.
Building that trust.
I agree. So that's something that obviously is after they sign, but just making sure that you're following through with that communication, that same dedication and process that you had before they signed.
Yes.
Now they're a client. They've given you that deposit.
Right.
Now show them that like they 100% made the right choice and this is going to be a good experience.
Yeah. And I think obviously keeping that going throughout the whole process is super important. Another thing I've implemented in the past like year or so is a 6-month check-in. From when I do their engagement session to when I reach out to them to do their questionnaire, there is a huge gap of when I would talk to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm always just so curious of like, how are you guys doing? Do you need anything? Like, I always want to be there for as a resource and continue to build that relationship. Like, if they're struggling, I want them to feel comfortable. Like, if they need something that they can reach out to me, showing that you care and you think about them. And I mean, that goes with any relationship and a client too.
Sometimes they forget your process. And I have seen that so many times, even with my current clients, is where like they will go, start through the planning process. They get 3 months in and like I'll do something, you know, like just, hey, you know, I see you're at this point in your checklist, how's everything going? And they reach back out that they're, you know, feeling stressed or something, and I'm like, hey, well, don't forget you have your weekly office hours they can use. Oh my goodness, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
Then they start using them, they're like, oh my gosh, I feel so much less stressed. Like sometimes they have a lot on their plates.
Yeah.
We don't know what they do for work. You know, they have other things outside of hiring a wedding photographer or a wedding planner.
So yes.
I get very siloed and like they've hired me. I'm the only thing in their life.
Yeah.
I am not. Yeah. I am not the only thing in their life. Yeah. They have 80 other things going on.
Right.
So sometimes it's just like a gentle reminder of here's something, here's a resource for you. Remember that you have this.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be a better experience for you too.
Right. What's good for them is good for you. Holding their hand through that would also bring less stress to you. It's a good thing for both the vendor and the client to build that relationship over time and make that experience better throughout the whole process, not just in the beginning.
If a vendor's listening and they're saying, I've done all of that and I still got ghosted. You told me something that I want to touch on here, and it's the concept of knowing when to archive.
Yeah.
Can you tell everybody what that means?
Yeah. So in HoneyBook, obviously there's like a pipeline and you can kind of move people from stage to stage. And there's a thing called archiving, which is basically just, you know what? I'm done. I'm walking away. We're getting rid of this project. Knowing when to archive and kind of like stop wasting your time. When you have had a phone call with someone and you're following up with them and they give you nothing, it is so hard to archive that, because you're like, we just talked for an hour on the phone and I'm just going to put this in the archives. Mm-hmm. It's hard to know when is the right time to do that. But just remember, you can also unarchive if they reach out again. But for your own mental capacity, knowing like, okay, I'm going to stop putting time into this. And and it's okay to move on. And there will be other clients. Let other clients come in. Make room for more people in your mind. And just archive that and call it a day.
And in my experience, when you walk away from a client situation like that, you will end up filling that spot with an amazing client.
For sure.
You would have been bummed if you were booked when
for sure. Out. It all happens for a reason. Your intuition, like trust that, because that person is going to find someone who's going to be amazing for them, and you're going to find a better client that's going to be amazing for you.
And if you do that, one of the other things I want to mention, because I was always so afraid to do that in the beginning, because I was like, oh my gosh, I have to take every
client. Yeah.
And then you learn that you do not have to take every client, nor should you, because they may not be the right fit. And there's been very few instances, but a few times where I've said, hey, this doesn't feel like the right fit. I know that can be an uncomfortable response. So I just want to give you a few tips of things that I do. One, I like thank them for their time. Like, congratulations on your wedding. Like, thank you so much for taking the time. You know, after you've shared a little bit more of your vision and your approach for the day, I just feel that I wouldn't be the best wedding planner to execute the vision, but I do feel like these three people would be great people to reach out to. Give them a recommendation, because now, although they may be disappointed because they reached out to you and they were interested in booking services, now you've given them a new direction and you maybe helped them find a better fit. We've always talked about this in the wedding industry. It's like, there's a million and one photographers, there's a million and one planners. There's people that are clients for me and there are people that are clients for someone else. Maybe it's a personality thing, maybe, you know, whatever it is. Like, it's just something that we've talked about. I had one client that came up to me at a bridal show and they're like, our wedding is like a gothic theme. Like, my table is like all simple white greenery. Yeah. And, you know, and I was like, how did you end up here? And it wasn't we still had a great conversation. I gave them some great resources, but I probably wasn't the right person to necessarily execute that vision. Right. So making sure you're kind of helping them, you know, guide them in the right direction. The other thing is too, I've had a few situations where a client reached out, they ghosted. They reached out again. You know, we had had a call, I sent them the pricing guide. They were going to discuss with family or something. 2 weeks goes by. I don't end up saving the date at that point, right? They reach out 2 months later. Hey, Eliza, we were getting back into the planning process. No problem. Hey, yeah, I can have like a 3 strikes and you're out rule.
Yeah.
So like, no problem. Yeah, that's great. You know, they asked for the proposal, sent the proposal, nothing again. And at that point, I had to decide for myself, this is how the planning process will go.
Yeah, like, it's not going to get better. This is just the beginning.
Same as the vendor side, right? Same as a client saying, oh, they didn't respond to me before I was a client. They're probably not going to respond to me when I am.
Yeah.
It's the same thing for us. And they came back a third time, and this was months later, and I said, I'm so sorry, I've been booked for the date. Or you just decided it wasn't a good fit, sharing that with them, because you have to know when to walk away.
Yeah, I totally agree. They've already wasted enough of your time, so don't waste any more of it.
All right, so we're coming to the end here, but we talked a little bit about tracking and how we're figuring out these inquiries and what's happening with them. You mentioned the pipeline, so I like that. Not everyone has HoneyBook, so obviously, however you're tracking this step through the process, but figure out what your method is for that. You reached out to them. I know for us, we have 2 like still interested emails.
Yeah.
Maybe one that's saying like, are you still interested in these services or do you have any questions? Mm-hmm. And then my second one is like includes a review.
I have that too.
You know, just to kind of like sell it a little bit more. One of your emails includes reviews.
Right? Yeah. It's basically like, if you want to hear what my other clients have to say, here's a link and you can see my 70 plus reviews.
Right.
And then it just backlinks to my Google listing where you can see all the reviews my clients left.
I think that's great. So definitely, if you are seeing that ghosting things by clients, try to make sure you're sending those kind of follow-ups.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people aren't following up too.
Right.
It's okay to be in their inbox, I would say 2 or 3 times before you call it quits. And then from there, just tracking that and tracking where your success lies. So obviously we've given you a ton of different resources today of like, well, maybe try this or have you done this? But, you know, recently I went through my inquiry process and was tracking, okay, what is converting to leads and what are some areas that I can improve? Why did this client walk away?
Yeah.
If you can get to the bottom of it, you're not always going to know. But if you can try to get to the bottom of it, I think that's helpful.
Oh, for sure. There's never a bad reason to go back and reevaluate. Every experience is a learning opportunity and just using it as that. And don't let it like get you down. I know getting ghosted and not getting responses is like so defeating, but maybe trying to keep your mindset positive. This happened for a reason. There's going to be a better client for me. Use it as a learning opportunity and don't let it drag you down.
Mm-hmm. But, and utilize your people too. I mean, you and I are constant with bouncing ideas off each other. Hey, what do you think about this? Or hey, here's this situation. The vendor community is something that is really beautiful, and I feel like we have a lot of support in it. So find the vendors that you work well with. Definitely try to utilize them, but also just to kind of say, hey, I'm not seeing these inquiries convert to leads. Is there something you think I should be doing better? You know, talk it through with someone. Talk your process through with someone.
And even I think you could do that with someone who's not a vendor too. Someone who almost isn't biased by being a vendor is also a great resource too. Ask your mom. Ask your dad.
Right.
And then also having vendors, I think, that are in different industries too. I think sometimes like a photographer looking at a photographer's things, you might overlook certain things because you're so used to it in the industry you're in. Yeah. But maybe just like, you know, diversifying your network and being able to lean on each other is really great because we do have a community here.
I would say spend less of your time posting the don't ghost wedding vendors.
Yeah.
And maybe start to just look at your process first.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree.
Thanks, everyone, for joining Champagne and Planning. This was so fun. We'll have to do this again.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hey, let us know what you think about the new setup. We love it. This was fun for us. We get to sit on this, comfy couch. But send us an email. Let us know. You can also reach out to both of us. And let's just give them our ways to reach out. So for me, Instagram, it's at ElizaJaneEvents_.
Instagram for you. And for me, it's at SLZ Photography.
She's wearing a sweatshirt that's branded with her logo. She's so fancy. I'm not wearing mine. And then my email is info@ElizaJaneEvents. So if you have things that you want to hear on the podcast, we're always open to new ideas and questions and all of that. So send it over.
Cool.
Thanks.
Well, have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.